This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Good afternoon and welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for being with us today. It is that day we call Your Money Matters, brought to you by our good friends at Affordable Interest Mortgage, your one-stop shop for all of your mortgage needs. Mr. Kurt Rogers joins us in studio today. All right, before we get to our special guest today, Kurt, let's talk a little bit about the mortgage world. And a lot of people are thinking this housing market is going to take a big hit like in 2008. How can it keep doing what it's doing? We were just talking that before we came live here on air. But you think we're going to get into any kind of crash?
My first response to 2008 is absolutely not. There are so many things that are so different than what's going on in 2008. First of all, the over 65% of the people that did a loan in 2008 had a credit score of 680 or below. Over 65% of the people that now are financing have a credit score of above 720. It's a completely different buyer. That's number one. Number two, they're not doing these what they call at that time subprime loans. They now call them non-QM loans. Those kind of loans aren't out there where there's so much risk. You know, you got a three-year ARM with a five-year prepay. And if you breathed on a mirror, you could get a loan. They're not the same. The other thing, the government learned a lot. Actually, they've done some very great things. They're keeping the rate down. Instead of like the last time when the mortgage meltdown, they gave the money to the banks. They're actually, the government's giving it to the people, which is keeping the money flowing through the system. You got to keep money moving through the system, and the housing market is, and employment are the two biggest things that keep money moving. And the housing market right now, as everybody knows, everybody's refinancing or they're buying a home. Well, that it, because of the rates are so low, it becomes so cheap. So it creates a problem about buying one. But we don't see that. The unemployment issue is not an issue because a lot of the people that were unemployed right now don't want to go back to work because they're getting all that money. And, I mean, look at the delays that we're having in lumber or the delays we're having in steel. All of that is causing a demand and inflation to go up. Now, at some point, we got to worry about inflation. But, no, I don't see the housing market changing. There's just too big a demand for it. Too many people moving off the East Coast and West Coast want to live here instead of there. And they're walking in with lots of cash.
Yep, absolutely. And real quick, well, I sent you a gentleman, and you worked with him great. And I'm telling you, him and his young wife, they're so discouraged of this housing market. They'll go in, they put a bid in on something, and then get outbid. And, you know, and they've done a few things where putting $30,000 or $40,000 over, you know. But everybody, I mean, we're seeing numbers $100,000, $125,000 over. What? How are people going to be able to get into a house if they don't have that kind of cash?
If you're looking at the statistics, a year ago this month, we had close to 7,000 homes on the market. Now we have less than 3,000. So it's dropped by over 62%. So that's causing a high demand. And like I just said, with people moving off the West Coast and the East Coast coming here, they're coming with lots of cash because those homes are more expensive. So, you know, I was watching a show last night about how much property values are going down in New York. But that's not the case here. So those folks are coming in with cash.
Right.
Now, there's many folks that would like to buy a house, but they don't have that extra $30,000 or $40,000. The average home is selling for $30,000 more than the asking price. The problem with that, the appraisals can't catch up because you have to look over the last 6 months.
Right.
They're trying, but they can't get there. So you have to sometimes have cash. There are ways that we can help you get into a home to absorb what's called the appraisal deficit. To where the house might go for $550, but it only appraises for $520. We can show you how to absorb some of that so you don't have to bring all that cash to the table.
Yeah.
There are ways to do that. But that market's going to continue. And it's going to continue through the rest of the year. Our special guest talking about selling his house, and, you know, he already gets it. He's getting
it.
He may not
want to say that publicly.
Yeah,
he may have 50 people waiting in his yard.
Pick up the thing. I probably shouldn't have said that. I'm really sorry.
That's okay.
He'll have everybody knocking on his door for that. It's that market's going to continue because there's people that need to buy homes. There's so many people coming into Colorado.
720-895-0500 is the number. It is Affordable Interest Mortgage. Well, that voice you heard is our good friend, Douglas County Sheriff Tony Spurlock. You know,
and he didn't dress up today.
No.
He wore civilian clothes. It's really kind of cool.
You know, Sheriff, there's this Did you grow up watching Westerns a lot?
I did.
And still watch them today. My wife will walk in, she'll go like,
not police chief.
How many times do you have to watch, you know, Rifleman, all these different things? I mean, I love Westerns. Sheriff just has the coolest thing in law enforcement to me.
I'm going to have to say I agree with that.
Okay, I like that.
I was talking to some friends of mine, and they're in law enforcement, and the office of sheriff is unique, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of the it's the only elected law enforcement office in the nation, and every other position that has leadership in law enforcement are appointed by someone else who's politically
motivated. That's a better word.
There we go. And it is unique because we do serve the people of our county. There's 3,200 sheriffs in the nation, and the average sheriff's office is about 25 to 35 deputies is what they say across this nation, which you have to kind of put your mind to that a little bit. Mm-hmm. A little difficult here in the metro area because we're just in a big metropolitan area. But still, the bottom line is the office of sheriff, you know, we work for the people. When I ran for office two times, I had to go to the people, meet with them, talk to them, say, this is how I want to protect you. This is how I want to enforce the laws. And the office of sheriff is unique that way. I don't have any political entity above me. I don't have anyone telling me what to do. I don't have no boss except you, because you live in my county.
Right, but but your wife also. I mean,
she is the boss.
Yeah.
And she reminds me all the time, you're not the sheriff in this house.
That's right.
I do get that on occasion. And it is very unique. It's an honorable job, and it's humbling, and it's honor. It's been my honor to serve, and I've enjoyed it a great deal. I have 21 months left, and
you're not going to rerun.
Not going to run. No, I'll have 43 years in law enforcement, and that's good. And the times are changing, and I think we might even talk a little bit about that. Times are changing for law enforcement. The young officers, I had an executive level meeting the other day, talk about how we maintain and keep cops in this business, how we maintain with the private sector, retirement, health care benefits, all of those kinds of things. People look at them today. Mm-hmm. You know, a young 25-year-old person says, do I want to be a cop, or do I want to go into the private sector? Do I want to do something else? And there's all these other options. And again, law enforcement has a lot of good benefits to it. But then there's this flip side to this coin.
Sure.
Everything you do is wrong. Every decision you make is questioned by 15 people who have never even set their rear end in the police car. Mm-hmm. People who are making decisions on jails that have never ran a jail. Sheriffs are unique. They are the keeper of all inmates in the counties before they go to the Department of Corrections. And so running a jail is a whole different thing than being a police chief. And those kinds of things are really unique in the sense of people say, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? And, you know, a jail is like a little mini city. And even today, now that, you know, they want everybody out of jails, there are still a lot of people in jails because those are people who, in my opinion, are evil, who are bad people. I don't classify them as having any kind of severe mental health disorder. Mm-hmm. They're just bad people and
bad choices.
Bad choices and repetitive bad choices.
Yes.
And so those things are very unique. And when we do as much as we can to help them reintegrate into society. Because I want them to do that, because I don't want them back in the jail. I don't want them out, committing crimes in the community. So it is very unique, but it is a cool job. I've had a blast doing it, and it's fun. There's lots of neat things that happen, for the office of sheriff, a lot of fun things that happen.
Sure.
But 43 years will probably be good.
Right. It's time to say goodbye.
So how many are under your authority, so to speak, as far as the other deputies?
So I have 669 employees. 375 of them are deputy sheriffs.
Wow.
And that is, well, chasing cats. Tail's on fire, let me tell you. But I've got some, I have good people in place that help do leadership and manage, and you just have to do that. And it's a, you know, it's a 24-hour a day service, so we have people around the clock, and obviously the jail is there. Lights are on all the time. My good friend Marshall Weaver used to always say, I'll leave the lights on for you in my jail. They're on all the time. So,
You are 24/7.
Yes.
When you're an elected official, you're on call all the time.
My wife reminds me that, again, as you said, we have not taken a vacation in 6 years since I became the sheriff. I said, a couple more years, baby.
Yes. And then we're
going to take a good vacation. Because, you know, you're on, and even when you're gone somewhere, something happens.
Sure.
And I know of a lot of sheriffs who have gone on vacation and a tragedy occurred in their jurisdiction, and they had to leave and come back.
Because they have to make decisions.
Right. Yeah. And so it is a unique job.
Right. First thing I want to talk about today, and been on the news here the last couple of days especially, where the officer was hit by the driver, and it had two mistrials, I think. And now I think this other one, got convicted on two of the three charges.
Yes.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah. But really just the whole principle of this is, like, to me, I just don't understand how this happens. You know, there's no brighter lights in the world than on police cars.
My wife and I have talked about that.
And
it's almost like you're zoned in and they aim at
it.
It's like they get hypnotized.
Night, day, whatever. You can see those lights forever. And slow down, do whatever you got to do, but pull over to the other lane. Not just stay in your lane and pull over 2 feet, but get over the other lane.
Yeah. There's a couple things I want to mention. One, Cody Donahue, Trooper Cody Donahue, that's who was ran over and killed, and his trial just finished yesterday, and the defendant was found guilty on two of the three charges. We had Jimmy Jurcevic, Trooper Jurcevic, who was killed just about a year before that, who was ran over and hit. And it happens, more police officers are killed or injured by being struck by a car than they are being shot or stabbed in America. And There's a theory, and it was used by the defense in this last case, and a lot of people are aware of it, professional drivers. Wherever your eyes go, your hands tend to go the same direction, particularly when you're in a car. The ever so slight movement of a steering wheel can cause you to move your vehicle, and at 55 miles an hour, it doesn't take very much to move your car from the left to the right.
4 or 5 feet.
Yes. And so your eyes... And we've said it before, and Colonel Packard, Colorado State Patrol, said it just the last night, move over. And it's a law here in Colorado. But part of that is when you talk about this theory of your eyes and your hands, when you see those lights, you should immediately start working at what's beside you. How can I move over? It distracts your eyes to the lights.
Slowing down. I mean,
slow down.
Get off the gas pedal. Yeah.
Get off the gas pedal and move over. Because there's not a lot of room, and officers often find themselves in predicaments where they have to be in that dangerous side. You know, we train them to be as far on to the right side as possible.
But sometimes, not that I've been pulled over a lot for speeding,
no.
But sometimes you got to keep that in mind when you get pulled over. You know, I mean, I think the officer would like for you to kind of pull over as far as you can,
yes,
right off the road, or even go up a little bit to a safe spot for everyone, right?
Right. And no officer is going to get, if you have to go a little distance to find a wider spot or to pull over, particularly if you're on a two-lane road, to give the officer some space. Because, it again, being struck by a car is unforgiving. There's not a lot of recovery there. And you can't jump out. We're not Superman, and people can't jump out of the way of a car that's moving 50 miles an hour. It's not physically possible, and you cannot push your way away. You can't do any of those kinds of things. And what's important also to remember is that often when you're driving big trucks, and you guys know this, when you're driving down the road, big truck goes by you, what does it do? It sucks you into its wake.
Telling you.
Yes.
Okay. And that's a 3,000, 4,000-pound car. Imagine a 220-pound person. It's on the side of the road, and it'll do the same thing. It will suck you in. And you, there's nothing you can do about it. You know, unless you're going to hang on to something, you're not going to know it. And so those are tragedies. I think justice was served yesterday in the hearing. And I think that, Cody's wife and family can now finally put everything behind them and work towards some recovery and a new life. But it happens everywhere. And it's real simple. I can, there's never a time when you can't pull over or slow down drastically and just move over, slow over. Everyone sees the light, so everyone needs to move over. If you're in a number two lane, move to the number one lane. Let that other person that's in the three lane move over. It's about being courteous. And I'd be happy to talk to you about my opinion on that, Kurt.
We ain't got enough time today, Tony.
I mean, we've got to come back to respect for our humankind. We got to have respect for each other and decency. And in this case, just move over. An officer was ran over and hit on I-70 just yesterday.
Yep.
And you have to move over.
Right.
One of the things I notice when police officers do stop, as they come up that last 3 to 5 feet, they'll just take the nose of the car and move it to the left, more into the lane, to kind of give them some kind of a little bit of protection between them and the person.
And it gives a visual appearance for the oncoming cars that you need to move. It's a arrow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's that visual arrow to move over. Ooh, I got to move over a little bit.
I don't want to hit the car.
I don't want to hit that car.
Yeah.
And so, obviously, across America, we're doing a lot of different things in training on how to approach cars alongside the road. And those that are, you know, in this case right here, it was a crash. So you already have debris and you have cars already in a different position that doesn't look right.
Right.
You want to distract. We're even looking at, companies are looking at, the way that they do the lights and in the distraction of the lights to move the lights, make the lights move to the left, and that will naturally move your eyes over.
Yeah.
As opposed to the blinky every which
way. Keeping you in the lane.
Keeping you in the lane. Move yourself out.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of new technology that is out there. We have that on our new cars now. We're testing some of that stuff. You can push that button and it moves all the lights to the left. Or depending on what circumstance you are, you can move them. Yeah. Anything that you can do to require the driver to pay attention. And I can tell you, you're distracted. Stay off your darn phone, okay? Put the thing in. Kids should not be on it because it's just too distracting. But even I find myself, I have to put it in the seat. I'll put it on answer off my car, and I will use my voice commands to talk. But even then, I have to remind everyone, think about how you get engrossed into a conversation and you start forgetting what's going on around you. And then all of a sudden you're like going, dang, I didn't realize I just went 2 exits.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So driving is to be driving.
Mm-hmm. It's not sitting in your living room.
It's not sitting in your living room. That's right, Kurt. And so, you know, everyone makes mistakes. Everyone says, oh, I got to get on the phone call for an emergency, whatever. But you don't need to have the long conversation or the argument. Boy, I tell you, if you're in an argument, turn the dang phone off. Just say, I'm driving, I'll call you back.
Right.
Sometimes that calms the argument down, too. Okay?
Pull over.
Right. Or pull over.
Yeah.
I was on 225 coming up here to the show, and I needed to make a phone call, but I needed information on. So I pulled up way far over, and I'm sitting there for a second. I hear sirens coming up behind me. And just so happened to be Aurora fire trucks going somewhere. But I pulled over to do that. I'm not anybody special. I'm here to honest.
Sure.
I don't do that all the time.
Yep.
But I knew I needed to look at my phone to look at some numbers to tell the person. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't do that to drive.
Don't you love the people that are driving and they're trying to read something that was sent to them and they got the phone up by their rearview mirror and they're trying to drive and look at that at the same time?
Yeah.
I'm
yeah.
like, really?
Well, because you want to be able to see the shadow that you're about ready to collide into.
No, no.
Okay.
I just look like, really, are you paying attention?
You're also gonna break a $1,000 phone because when you have impact in that car, that phone's going to go flying in the other direction.
True.
You're just going to have to buy a new phone, too.
Douglas County Sheriff Tony Spurlock is our guest. You just mentioned that, hearing a siren behind you. So let's talk about that a little bit, you know, because it amazes me sometimes when I see people, they just kind of freeze. And they're in the middle lane, you know, and they don't know what to do, it seems like.
Yeah.
So getting over the right is, I guess, the procedural thing. But if you can't get the right, should you just go left and clear the middle lane?
Yeah, you want to. It's good to look and see, look in your rearview mirror. You hear a siren, look in your rearview mirror, and you see where that
where they're trying
where
to go.
They're trying to go. Yeah. And if you can go left, go left. And if you can go right, go right. Give them space.
Right.
Ambulances and fire trucks, you know, they're constantly looking at intersections, trying to clear those. The goal is to get them to the place as quick as they possibly can so they can save someone's life. And so not obstructing them is key. But this moving over. Now, the other part of that is that you can't have your radio blaring full blast either. You need to be able to hear what's going on around you. I've been in a police car before, and you're right behind someone, and they're just driving along. And they got their radio just going full blast.
Singing.
Right. Singing along, having a good time. That which means they also don't remember what exits they just passed.
Right.
But it's interesting in parts of the country. I just came back from Oklahoma. And if two things that are interesting there, if there is a funeral procession or a police car or fire truck going down the road, they'll pull over to the right and stop.
Yes.
And if you're not familiar with that, you need to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kind of shocked me a little bit. And of course, my wife reminds me, hey, this is Oklahoma. You know, this when there's a funeral procession, everybody pulls over to the side of the road. They stop, let the procession go by.
Right.
And the same way with law enforcement. And, of course, I'm driving around there, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? You know, because I'm used to driving here in the metro area where
nobody stops.
No one stops for anything.
That don't matter.
Even that little red light in the middle of the intersection.
Or that octagon sign.
Right. And so it's interesting about parts of the country where people have cultural stuff. And I've lived here my whole life. You've been here a long time. You've been here a long time, too, Kurt. The culture of Colorado has changed. We have changed a lot. A lot of people from the East Coast and the West Coast are coming here. It is a beautiful place to do. Although it's cold today,
sure. It's
still beautiful. It was wonderful this morning to come out. It was crisp. There's the frost on there. And it was like, oh, yeah.
Take a good deep breath.
That's right. I live in Colorado. There's some clean air. It's nice. Everyone's coming here. And they're bringing all of their culture
with them.
With them. And so we have to have patience. But I also, I have friends that have moved here, and I was like, hey, I have patience with you, but remember, you live in Colorado now. This is what we do here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Kind of help guide them a little bit. But again, it goes back to having a little respect and patience for your mankind,
sure. Your
friend, because we do things here different than other states, and just like other states do. You know, you go visit somewhere, things are awkward.
Mm-hmm.
And just, again, I can't say it enough, you know, from a law enforcement perspective, I do see a lot of people say a lot of kind things to cops. Hey, thank you for your service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is nice. When I was in Oklahoma, I saw some Oklahoma City cops. I came up and commented to them, hey, thanks for you guys, what you do. It wasn't like it was a shock to them. They were like, oh, thank you. You know, it was kind, nice. So I think that that's a good thing. It doesn't hurt us. You can say the same thing to anybody else.
Right.
You
know, one thing that just with all the things we see on, you know, TV and the reports and all the things that's just happened over these last few years, it seems like everything is focused on the policeman and how they handle stuff and zero responsibility for how the person was treating the cop or, you know, not complying. Because here's a great way not to get in trouble or not get into getting shot and all the things.
Yeah.
Do what the officer tells. To me, this is not hard. And you know what? And if you feel like getting mistreated, that's what attorneys are for.
That's
but
right.
You know what? Everybody still gets to go home, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, why is there no responsibility? And I'll just use this word on the criminal, so to speak,
right.
or the citizen, you know?
Yeah. It's not rocket science. When first, stop committing crimes, okay? And if you don't know the difference between right and wrong, maybe you ought to look up a church or call somebody else, I don't know, ask for some guidance. But stop committing crimes. Nonetheless, that aside, if you get contacted by the police, just listen to what the police are asking you to do. You know, if they want you to get out of the car, you know, you get out of the car. Most cops don't want you out of the car. They want you in the car.
Right.
You have less movability.
That's right. And just listen to them. Listen, I understand that there are places and there are bad cops in this country. There's bad everybody. I'm not going to say that every cop is perfect in every way. But you also know, hey, I just got pulled over for driving recklessly or carelessly in a school zone or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe the cop might be a little agitated because you don't know that he just worked a call there where a kid was ran over a week before. But give the individual a moment. Say, just listen to what the officer asked for. You want driver's license? Give the driver's license. You want your insurance card? Give your insurance card. Comply with the officer.
You mentioned it earlier, and I think we're seeing it in a lot of different areas, but the police seem to be taking the brunt of it more than anybody. It's a lack of respect for the person in the position that they have.
Yes.
People don't respect, you know, when you ask them to do something, they don't respect you doing that. That you don't have the authority. It's like, I'll do whatever I want to do. You can't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
But there's laws that you have to abide by, and there's things that you need to
do. Well, it seems like people, the first thing they want to do is pull out their phone and start recording the situation, and I say recording the confrontation, which there wouldn't really be a confrontation.
Yes, right.
Again.
Yeah, if you put the phone down.
If you did, because that's going to change everybody. Yeah. Hey, we're all human too, you know, and that's going to change the whole little bit of the attitude too when you start,
sure.
You know, somebody starts doing that.
From the people that I know, and it's not just you, Tony, the people that are police officers, their goal is not to pull out their gun and shoot somebody. That's not something that they really look forward to doing. It's kind of the last thing, but because of how they have to make their decision so quickly because of what you're responding to, you have no idea, like you said, what happened a week ago, and that response is now the same, so they have to be ahead of the game. It's like that cop that came on the girl that was fighting with a knife. How do you have a knife fight when you have one knife? That's not a knife fight.
That's not a knife fight, yeah.
And I'm like, what are we doing here? And that was so wrong, but it didn't get looked at it that way. When the police officer comes in, he's not going to stand there and watch what goes on.
Yeah. It is one of the things about just having, you know, respect for authority, and we have, I'm not going to say a generation, but we have a close to that, it seems like, where people are just respecting the government, the, you know, of all levels of the government, and then anyone who's an authority says, you can't do this or don't do that. And 99.9% of every contact that the law enforcement officer makes, it's about, you know, hey, you know, maybe you shouldn't have done this, or somebody reported that you did that. Can we figure out what happened? Let's sort it out. Let's all get on our way. And I'm telling you, that's what cops want to do. Last thing cops want to do is they don't want to do paperwork.
Nope.
Okay. And, you know, and they don't want a confrontation. They're not interested in fighting. You know, they just want to have a good, calm shift. And, you know, there has been some tragedies in this country where, yes, officers have done some bad things. And again, that's not everyone. And,
right.
And we have to continue to remember that. And just like cops, we tell the cops all the time, listen, you know, you come across people often in law enforcement that are at their worst time in their life. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean everybody that you come in contact with is in that way. You might pull over someone who just wasn't paying attention. They're the nicest, kindest person. There's no reason to be mean to them. And we preach that in law enforcement. Be kind to everyone, assess their situation, and figure out what's happening, and then deal with that situation as it presents itself to you.
With that in mind, with everything that's going on and the way people look at police officers and challenge them, what are some of the changes that Douglas County Sheriff's Department has made to try to mend some of that, to get people to give you the opportunity to have a conversation? What's going on that we don't see? Because they want to change all the police departments.
Oh, there's a lot of, they want to change everything in it. And I can tell you, one of the things that we've done is we've put a lot of resources into de-escalating. We've got a training program right now that we're presenting to Post Board to have it reviewed. And it's about de-escalating the situation, which means having conversation, being aware of the entire surroundings, training officers to be aware of your situation, try to get into your situation so they understand where you're coming from. Also is looking at and being able to assess right away if we have someone who has a mental health disorder that you need to address. Because often that's different than talking to you and I. You know,
yes.
We can have the conversation, but someone who has a mental health disorder who's not seeing the world from the same perspective as everyone else.
And they might not be high or drunk.
They may not be high or drunk.
That's right.
Right. They just may have an unfortunate circumstance. We know that there are people who have disabilities, and often those disabilities present themselves as someone who might be argumentative or loud, because they naturally are loud because they might be deaf. And so those kinds of things, assess the environment so we're not overreacting.
Right.
And those are the things that we've been trying to get the legislators to say, hey, listen, put your resources and your goodwill to work on training and providing, you know, social information. You know, it seems like the legislators today, all they want to do is just do a law to fix one single thing, but they don't look at
the side effects,
the unintended consequences.
Right.
And let's put resources in to help officers understand every kind of circumstance in their jurisdiction. The other thing we have to continue to do is, and I'm a big component of this sitting on the post board, we have to put money out into the rural America. We got to put money into these small agencies. Metro area agencies have money to train. They have resources. But these smaller jurisdictions, they don't, and they still do the exact same police work that my deputies do. They still have the same issues and the same problems. But because they live in a small little town, you know, that's having to make their own way, mm-hmm. we need to put statewide resources to law enforcement in these small jurisdictions to help them. Because I read an article just this last week that the majority, as I said earlier, the majority of all law enforcement agencies are less than 10 police officers and their right. whole agency. And they're very small, and small sheriff's offices. We can do a better job collectively, and we could do it better in the state of Colorado by putting those resources to those jurisdictions that need the money, small places that don't have the revenue, that don't have the Park Meadows Mall, that are generating thousands and millions of dollars in taxes. Okay, go shop at Park Meadows Mall whenever you can. Okay, that's it.
I could throw a softball and hit it.
But we need to move that money, and we need to be smart about it. Mm-hmm. And so I urge the legislators to do that. Please look at these things. Don't just be making a bill because something pisses you off, you know, and you don't right. like it. Let's do the right thing, and let's think through these, and then bring people in, experts that understand whatever the circumstance is. Mm-hmm. And I will say that I've been working with some legislators on housing and how we house individuals and how we house juveniles, and we've been having lots of meaningful meetings, which are helpful, because everyone, you can bring subject matter experts in and talk about what does it really mean to have these many beds in a jail or these many beds in juvenile detention facilities, and why it's not just a good idea because you don't think kids need to be in jail, that there are a lot of dangerous kids that are in jail, and we just can't just eliminate the beds because we don't think they should be in jail. If not for their age, they would be in an adult jail because of their violent crime.
Right.
Sure.
Right. And I wanted to follow up a question with, how is that, with all the changes going on in the attitude, how's that affecting retention and new hires?
It's affected retention and new hires significantly across the state, and I'm being told across the nation. It's very difficult. We talked a little bit about what are we going to do for these employees. Are we giving them benefits to make them want to stay, mm-hmm. an enticement to want to stay? Because it is difficult. People say, I'm not really interested in losing my entire house and everything that I have and my savings because of a single mistake, if I'm not going to have governmental immunity on an accident. And so it does make it difficult, and it's difficult to retain cops now. It's become harder and harder and harder, and we're seeing that as well. I lose about 60 officers a year from either retirement or going into new fields because they right. just don't want to be a part of that. And then
is that normal? Or is it up?
It's up. It's up. It's not normally that high. And then it's hard to replace them.
Right.
and in replacing them mm-hmm. takes some time.
Training.
training because
money.
You lose a five-year officer, and now I hire a guy that's a one-year officer. Their skill level is drastically different. Mm-hmm. And so we have to spend more time with this one-year officer to get them up to speed. Right. And so it's more money, it's more burden on the taxpayer. And you know, this aggression against law enforcement is not helping the greater good because it really is causing our communities a lot of money and a lot of cost to the average taxpayer.
Right. Well, the scrutiny that's on, you know, every move, I mean, that they do, you know, I mean, I don't think any of us would enjoy that scrutiny of our work every day, of every second, of every contact we have with every person. And, you know, if they're too tentative, they could get shot or they could get hurt. And so, boy, what a training that they must have to go through to try to get all that figured out in a number of weeks to get that balance of, you know, protecting yourself and, you know, and doing all that you need to do. Because, man, I mean, this isn't Hollywood. This isn't movies, and you're on a show again tomorrow. I mean, you know, somebody doesn't show you their hands. Yeah,
you
don't
can't
know
say,
what's coming
stop for
next.
A minute. Wait a minute. I got to run this through my brain to make okay, now, right, if this happens, you need to relax for just a second. I got to figure this out. Okay. You don't get to do that.
You don't.
It's moving much faster.
And we've talked about, you know, we unfortunately had an officer involved shooting a couple weeks back, where unfortunately the individual did not comply with any of the commands, had a rifle, was pointing at officers, and then eventually shot at one of our officers, and we returned fire, and then unfortunately causing his death. No cop wants to do that. I know the cops that were out there on that. I went to the scene. I know those guys. They're good men and women that were out there. Mm-hmm. They want to save lives, and you know, it affected them, and then it will affect them. And, of course, it affected the families.
Sure.
And nobody wants to do that. Nobody wants to be in that situation. And so, you know, we exhaust every possible means. Sometimes that window of opportunity is in about a 90-second window.
Mm-hmm. I know. Everybody thinks you have all this time to decipher all the different
and
things that are being said or whatever.
And most cops will say, I'll take that 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. I can do a lot of thinking in 90 seconds.
Yeah.
That's the elevator speech if you want to get elected to office,
right?
90 seconds. Sometimes it's half of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like you said, Kirk, you don't have that opportunity to say, well, I need to thumb through my manual. I need to think about this. Can
okay, if he does this, what am I paying? Am I listening to him? No, I ain't got time for that. He's got a knife. I'm telling him to stop.
Yes. Yeah. And knives are scary. I mean, they're lethal, obviously, and you know, there's, you know, people say, well, shoot the knife out of their hand. I always like to remind people, come to the range, and we're going to set up a little dummy out there, and we're going to put a knife in the range, and then I'm going to start throwing water bottles at you. And then I want you to shoot that knife out of that dummy's hand.
Yeah.
You know, out of the mannequin's hand. It's not going to happen.
No. They're not sharpshooters.
No, we're not sharpshooters. And it's just, and you can't do that because you have to remember that that bullet's going to go someplace else. You know, it goes beyond.
That's right.
And, you know, and everyone has to keep that in mind too. And we train our officers that to look down that muzzle and look beyond the target.
Mm-hmm.
What's on the other side? Oof, can't do that. And usually that takes about a second. And in these exchanges that last sometimes only about 6 to 10 seconds, you're now at the disadvantage because that person on the other end may also have a gun or maybe charging with a knife. And time is of the essence.
Right.
And so there is a lot to it. Not anyone's listening today. If you want to get a good job, Denver, Aurora's looking, Lakewood, Jefferson, Douglas County, we're all looking for cops.
What ages? I mean, is there too old of an age?
Well, you know, our average age is 41.
Okay.
In my office, and we do not have an age cap. You have to obviously pass the physical fitness
and the mental thing,
yeah. You know, for the record, you know, and I'm an old guy, I'm 62 and I can still pass the physical agility, the entrance level, barely, but I can make the mark.
The entrance.
I can barely make it, but I still do it. And so there's lots of opportunities, you know, for people. And the key thing here really in police work today is you got to have a good mind for it. You know, we're not just looking for somebody who is strong and can run.
Sure.
We're looking for somebody who can think and who is
in
critical.
In pressure situations.
Right. A critical thinker, a critical listener. That's what we're looking for, mm-hmm. and looking for people who are interested in that type of a job. And, of course, all those other things kind of come to play. Again, often they see it. There's a bad thing that happens on TV, and they think it happens to cops every day. I've got cops that work that never go to a call where they ever put their hand on their gun or their taser mm-hmm. all day long for a month. All they're doing is thinking.
Right.
They're using their mind and their language and their ability to communicate and de-escalate things and to solve problems. You know, the use of force is a very minimal percentage of time that is really done in the law enforcement career. Most of it is done by using your mind. Mm-hmm.
And the media always shows the entire encounter. They don't,
well, of yeah, course.
You get to see everything that happened.
Yeah.
We love that.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I've done some things that a lot of the media outlets, you know, didn't enjoy. I create my own news story. I have the ability to do that, so I do. I create my own news story. I make sure that I tell all the information. I answer all the questions that I know doing this business for 41 years that people are interested in hearing. And then we put that video out on our social media on YouTube, and then give it to the radio or news stations and say, here it is. I'm not going to ask or answer any more questions.
Well, I mean, if anyone has done any type of interview with TV stations, and, you know, I've done a few of those myself.
Sure.
You will get 30 minutes on tape, and it's a 30-second soundbite, and it's amazing how some of those sentences are not the way you structured them.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Sound bites are the death of you. And so, you know, you want them, and I've been caught on a bunch of them myself.
Yeah.
I've done that before. And you, again, we need everyone to work together. We need the news to actually do what the news is supposed to, and that's report the news.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be getting politically involved.
All of it.
Yeah. Report the news. Report to somebody who wants to know what's going on. You know, we need our governments to do what our fundamental duty was, and that is to protect our citizens and provide a safe environment for them to start a business and to grow and have a place for their family. Instead of all these other things that we somehow think that we need to put our fingers in.
Sure.
You know.
These neighborhood apps that are around. I saw the other day someone put a post from the Douglas County Sheriff, and they said something like this, you know, we don't sit here and read all these things. If something's happening, you need to call us,
yeah.
Right? And so have these apps proven to be a good thing, a bad thing? Are they changing anything?
They're actually a good thing. Nextdoor and I asked my PIOs to put that message out,
okay.
Because often people will get on there and they'll say, hey, I just saw these two kids, you know, trying to break into cars. Okay? That just goes out into the abyss.
Right.
How about if you call 911 and then put it on the abyss? Okay?
Yeah, you watch your neighbor chasing down two kids in the neighborhood. No.
Right, yeah. Or, hey, they're stealing, you know, these planters or whatever. Call us. Call any law enforcement in your jurisdiction and then go on the Nextdoor app because they do work.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of we have solved some serious crime by going to folks and getting their door.
These ring things,
these ring
man,
things
are unbelievable.
Because we can see them trying to break into cars, and we solve the crime by being able to see the individual. And they're so high def that we are able to see a tattoo on a guy's hand
mm-hmm.
and then able to use that tattoo as an identifier, someone who we thought was doing it. And then, of course, there's a tattoo. Then we're like, how many of those are around?
Yeah.
You know? So those things are awesome to have, not only just for law enforcement, but for your neighbors to share mm-hmm. stuff. And we often will reach out. We have a program in Douglas County where you can register your doorbell ring and your account to us.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
And then you can automatically just push stuff to us. If I saw something, something was weird, send it to us. And then we evaluate it. We don't keep the data because we don't have the space.
Sure.
You know, on a lot of stuff.
Unless
it's important or connected to a case, yeah.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions I want to ask you, and I did a little reading on it, it's about a Senate bill, I think it's 52 or 62.
62.
Something to do with the jails.
Yes, yeah. Senate Bill 62.
And they want to kind of open them up, want to make a big
They want to party. Make, and I'll say this right now, they want to make Colorado dangerous. It's dangerous. Senate Bill 62 passes, Colorado will be a much more dangerous place to live. And all these people that are coming from California, New York, and the Midwest that want to come to Colorado and do business here in Colorado, which makes us a healthy state. And I urge the governor to veto it if it goes to his desk. His job is to make sure that this state is a healthy state, a wealthy state, a place where you want to grow and your business and raise your children. Mm-hmm. 62 will make it incredibly dangerous. Essentially what it does is any crime that is below a felony three, so felonies four, fives, and sixes, and all the misdemeanors, one, twos, and threes, only thing the cops can do is write you a ticket. I steal your car, all the cops can do is pat you on the head, write you a ticket. It's okay if you don't come two or three times to court. It's all right.
If you ignore the warrant.
If you just ignore it, don't worry, sometime we'll catch up to you. Because we know it was just a mistake, okay? This is ludicrous. It's crazy. It's a crazy bill. It's dangerous for the state of Colorado. And I'm telling you, I put it out on my Facebook. Everyone who's listening to this radio, they need to call their legislators and call the governor. Do not pass that bill, because what it does is it puts all the criminals out on the street. It requires them to have no bonds. It requires them just to get a ticket and walk away. Imagine this: if your car gets stolen, okay, you call your insurance company, and because you have insurance on your car.
Right.
Right.
All right. And do you think that law enforcement is going to spend a lot of energy and time on trying to figure out who stole your car? So insurance is going to go crazy, because they're just going to steal cars, because essentially it's now free Uber in the state of Colorado. Okay? The car's sitting off the road.
If you think about it, you're right. It is.
Yes. So your insurance is going to go up. And I don't blame the insurance company, because they're carrying the debt.
Sure.
And So you cannot have this. We have to have consequences for your actions. George Brockler, ex-district attorney of the 18th, he said it a number of times. You have to have consequences for your actions. And so they're eliminating the consequences and basically saying it's okay if you're a thief or if you do any of those other crimes, frauds, defraud the elderly. You're stealing mail out of mailboxes, and then you're creating fraudulent
taking
credit
social
cards,
security checks.
Taking social security checks. If you're shoplifting in King Supers, if you're a businessman listening to this radio station, you need to call them and say, "Don't do this. I'm taking over your radio."
No,
show.
No, no. Good information.
That's a good question for
good
you.
Good information.
Because here, if you own your store, imagine if you owned a fish and tackle store. Okay. And a bunch of people came in, and they just stole all your stuff and just walked out, and you called the cops, and there's not much I can do about that. No. I can tell them not to do that again. I can write them a ticket. Okay. Who pays for that? That guy does, who owns the fish and tackle store. That's out of his own pocket. So now he either has to
file a claim against his insurance company.
Insurance is going to go up,
yep.
And everyone who owns a business who has that insurance, yep, is going to pay for some of that. Or he just puts it out of his pocket and says, well, that's just
cost
life.
Of doing business.
Cost of doing business. No, it isn't. We shouldn't be that way.
It's not the way it was.
And our legislators shouldn't be doing that. They're harming the state of Colorado. They're harming us, and it's dangerous for the state of Colorado to pass Senate Bill 62. There is not one good thing in it that will make a difference for the people of the state of Colorado, for their safety. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because you get me on my soapbox. I'm getting crazy.
Well, when you say felony three, is that like if somebody comes into your house and steals something?
So, yes, all right. So if you have a burglar, somebody comes in, kicks your back door in, steals some stuff, as long as they don't steal a gun, but they steal you some great artwork, and or you had some other kind of
jewelry.
Valuables. Yeah. Jewelry.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a misdemeanor.
Well, it's
I
a
get
felony.
A ticket. I get
a it's a felony, but you just get a ticket.
I get a ticket.
You just get a ticket.
So there's nothing really stopping these people from doing it.
No. And I want to be here to tell you that it happens in Douglas County, happens everywhere across this country, but often burglars burglarize something, they are interrupted by a homeowner, and something tragic happens. Okay, and that's dangerous. We can't just say, well, it's okay to burglarize houses now, because that's what the legislators are saying. It's okay to burglarize because we're not going to do anything about it. You're not going to go to jail. You're not going to have to post a bond. You're just going to get a ticket. All right? It's dangerous for us to not have consequences. And imagine your 16-year-old at home not feeling well, didn't go to school. Somebody breaks into the house because, well, it says it's okay in Colorado to burglarize. It's not that big a deal.
All I get is a ticket for
all I get is a ticket. Yeah. It's like parking in a no parking zone, and then they're interrupted, and the child is there, and something horrific happens because the mindset of the criminal is like, I can do this. Nobody cares.
Yeah, this child, I'm okay.
There's no consequences. I can do whatever I want to do. Because no one is going to hold me accountable for my behavior. And it's not once when we bring that up and we talk to the legislators about that, not once do they even bat an eye to say, well, wait a second, we got to think about this.
What?
Yeah, because the bill is really designed, it is said, Senate Bill 62, it is a depopulation, jail depopulation bill, which essentially says we don't want to have people in the jail. Now listen, as a sheriff, I don't want to have a lot of people in my jail either because it's incredibly expensive and it's very difficult to take care of them. But there are people that deserve and need to be in jail while they're going through the system or while they're serving their time. Mm-hmm. And so you should leave that up to the sheriffs and the jail administrators on who should be in jail and who isn't. And I'm here to tell you, we do a great job about it. I don't know where they're coming from. I don't know where they're coming up with these stories, you know, that someone was, you know, wrongfully, you know, huge groups of people are in jail when they don't need to be because they're a DUI driver or, you know, that's a domestic case, they need to be let out. It started off as a depopulation bill and it went into this crazy thing of just saying, well, any of these crimes, you get to go ahead and do that. And there's no consequences for your behavior. And the police hands are tied. They don't get to arrest you. They don't get to do a lot of things. They just get to write you a ticket. And again, I tell you, they steal your car, Kurt. My deputies catch the guy, all right? He gets out of the car and he goes, yeah, I just needed a car to drive today. And you write him a ticket and he walks away.
Yeah, you got a nice car. You got a nice classic car. I just needed to take it for a drive.
And I have to call you up and say, hey, you want to come and get your car? Because if I tow it, it's going to cost this money. It's going to cost this. And the guy walks away. Now he's on the freeway. And I'm like, well, dude, you can't be on the freeway because you're going to get run over. So now I got to give the guy who steals your car a ride. How ridiculous is that?
Oh, yeah.
And wait, I just got to make sure I understand that. And when you talk to the politicians about it, the legislators, they go like, well, we need to discuss that because it might be okay. That's their attitude?
Well, they keep pushing back on it. Well, we have too many people in jail that don't need to be in jail. Well, then work on that. Don't work on this other. Their approach, because they didn't really consult experts, their approach is a shotgun blast to the sky and hope that we get the one bird.
Right.
You know? And yes, we do need to reduce our jail population. There are some people that don't need to be in jail. I tell my chiefs of police in there, I said, don't bring me a homeless guy because he trespassed. He doesn't need to be in jail. He needs to have services. He needs to have some other things. Don't bring him to my jail.
Sure.
Because he's probably not well, and he's probably been arrested a bunch of times, and we have a bunch of issues. The jail is not the place for him. You have a guy who's got a mental health disorder, and he might be homeless. The jail is not the place for him. He's not going to get treated in jail. He's not going to get cured in jail. That's right. I agree. Don't put those people in jail. Mm-hmm. That's not what this bill does. This bill basically captures them and everybody else in the swath. The people who are actually committing crimes. We had a group of four people steal cars out of city of Castle Pines. They didn't live in Douglas County. They lived in a northern city. And they stole cars, wrecked them, damaged them. And under this new law, I'd have to pat him on the head, write him a ticket, and say, you know, your home's this way.
Home.
You got to get on the bus over here. Please don't steal that, too.
Wow.
Okay. Now, today, we arrested every one of them, and we took them all to jail, including a juvenile. And we took them to jail. Responsible parties had to come to get the juvenile. Those other individuals had to go to jail, and they had to post bond. They had a consequence. Under this bill right now, we just have to let them go.
Well, last couple of minutes here, but you mentioned juveniles. So I want to ask you, with all the schools, you know, having school, not having school, all that, have you seen any rise with juvenile issues, so to speak, with the schools, you know. So, not,
you know, we have mm-hmm. seen some rise in not a lot of juvenile crime. We've had some, I'm just going to say across the board, yes, we did see a rise, and I think it's fair to say that.
Right.
Kids are designed to be with other kids, and they should be in school, and they should be learning, mm-hmm. and it's very difficult for them to do it at home and online, and it's not natural for them, so they are going to act out. They are going to, you know, when they do get a little bit of freedom, they may, because they don't understand, they're new, their brains are still developing, they don't understand, ooh, that's a limit, I should not go there.
That's where they develop community skills, social skills.
Yes, in the school. And so, yes, we did see that, and we saw a lot of it, I think, across the state. We saw it in Douglas County. We didn't see the spike in suicides at some places mm-hmm. were, but we did see spikes in other mental health issues from
because people are stressed, man.
Yes.
I mean, we all are.
Yeah. And so we did see a little bit of that, and it's difficult to interpret because – you know, they're young people. Mm-hmm. And so we did see some of that, and we're hopeful. I'm hopeful that we'll be able to open up even a little bit more. We can keep the kids in school. We can have programs for kids. They've got to be able to socialize in sports and yep. other kinds of events, because that's how kids learn and grow. And we did see some of that. And we diverted resources to try to address some of those things. Mm-hmm. So we could stay on top of it. I can only imagine, you know, other larger places. I mean, Douglas County is pretty big, you know, but other places, how just complicated that had to be for them.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, I could talk all day here.
I was going to say,
a lot of great
topics.
We
need to have another hour.
Absolutely.
I got other questions.
Well, Bud, we appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure being here with you guys. I love talking to you guys. You guys are awesome, and you do a great job in your show, and I may have to call you at my house.
You got it. Okay. I'll help you.
Okay. Well, I got to find another one, though.
Yeah, exactly. That's the key. Hey, you can make a lot of money, but what are we going to do?
Get a big check.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I understand I can put a tent right back out here on 225.
Boy, that's another show. Kurt, thanks so much for setting us up. We appreciate it. Affordable Interest Mortgage brought you our show today, 720-895-0500. Want to thank Douglas County Sheriff Tony Spurlock for spending the hour with us. Remember, you see those flashing lights, pull over.
Please pull over.
All right, slow down, pull over. Let's save some lives and just get our state back safe again on the highways. Thanks for being with us today for Haystack Help Radio. Hope you have a great rest of your day.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.